Welcome, lords. Welcome into the inner sanctum of the Lobot Lounge. Here, gathered together to discuss all things Game of Thrones, are the lords of the gentlemen nerds. Presenting here for you, we have Lord Michael of House Finn, champion of time and space, editor of voices, keeper of birds, breaker of memories, and sultan of sci-fi.
Hey, that's John, why don't you come down to the coast? Hang out. We can, you know.
And next to him, of course, Marcus Snow, the bastard of House Farnash, father of gorillas, sworn allegiance to House Carter, master of prose, projector of film, and popper of corn.
Unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
And finally, Lord Aranus of House Diorive, scribe of games and scripts, master of dungeons, sworn enemy of all things venom, predictor of fates, father of Christmas, and loyal hand and protector to Queen Blythe and Lady Elena.
I cook and I know things.
And I'm Joseph, I'm the King of the North.
And I'm your host at the Emotional Touchstone here for our Game of Thrones Gentlemen Nerds episode. Yes, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! We're very excited, yes, to discuss Game of Thrones. We're on season 7 now, and we've done a Game of Thrones show in the past, and we had a really great one. We just finished season 7, and we're dying to talk. So we got dragons, we got whites, we got white walkers, we've got betrayals and faceless men. It's going to be fun. Grab a drink. Sit down, hot pie serving some food. Let's do this. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the gentlemen nerds. The gentlemen nerds are four entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about geeky and nerdy things, mostly in the vein of film, television, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many, many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show.
I have a theory. One of us is not going to survive. This podcast.
I predict that you will be wrong about your theory.
I think we're going to all survive just fine.
Yeah. Let me just say, first of all, that you are some of the smartest people I know. And here's why. I'm sure everybody listening already knows that we're like actually really clever, all of us. But sometimes... I don't know why that made me laugh. We hold these truths to be self-evident, you know, and I think people, if you're listening to the Gentlemen Nerds, you know, all right, at least some of those guys are pretty smart, but you're all very clever, and here's why. In private conversations prior to all of this, when we were talking on Instant Messenger through various Facebooks, we all sort of had little kind of predictions, and almost everything that we called came to pass. It was great. It was really fun. It was like, wow, he really nailed that. Oh my God, he was right about that. You know, it's just nice to hang out with people who are as smart as me. That's what I'm saying.
Well, here, and you know what? That actually leads wonderfully into one of the things I wanted to talk about is, okay, first of all, I think we can all agree that we've all enjoyed this last season tremendously, correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
We have had a great time watching these episodes. So much comeuppance has happened to so many very deserving characters. And so it's just good stuff. It's good stuff. It's finally coming to a conclusion. And I hope it will be a very satisfactory conclusion. I think it will. But because what once started with endless possibilities and a cast of characters of 100 or more and all of these plot threads that could go anywhere... Obviously, a show like this at the beginning is going to be more unpredictable and is going to have more surprises and twists and turns than when you're getting to the final chapters. And we whittled down those characters to a cast of maybe about 10 really important ones, maybe. And the plot threads are all being tied together, and we see the inevitable plot engine pulling this forward, we know kind of where it's going. Now, there still is going to be twists and surprises, and we don't know who exactly is going to sit on the Iron Throne, and who's going to die, and who's going to sacrifice themselves, and who's going to end up being the new Night King, and all that stuff. But this complaint that I have seen on Facebook and other social media, where people are actually saying, Game of Thrones is predictable now, it's boring. I don't get it, gents. I don't get it. Who the fuck thinks that this show is now predictable and boring? Are you kidding me? Does anyone else feel that way?
No, I don't. I don't feel that way.
Well, I don't know. The visuals are getting really, really bad. I mean, they kind of suck now.
What? He is trolling. Don't listen to him. This is a classic Mickey trap. Don't fall in.
It's the exact opposite. It's the same budget this year, I swear. I don't know this for a fact, but it's the same budget. They just poured more into the dragon effects.
Yeah,
I don't get it, guys. I mean, I see it more as it is a satisfying culmination of years, obviously, worth of plotting and characterization and laying threads and giving you teases and setting things up in Act 1 that is going to obviously pay off in Act 3 of if we're looking, this is a three-act, you know, the series is a three-act structure. But holy cow, never once did I stop and think, you know what? It's boring now. Yeah. You know, that just, it lost
it for
me. I don't
know, when Ed Sheeran was on, that was...
The whole you know, death has to be completely random in order for this show to be enjoyable. Whoever said that death has to be completely random for this show to be completely enjoyable? No.
Well,
no.
You know,
I will say this. As far as the death things go, we could talk openly here because, you know, spoiler alert has been said. Yes. Apart from Lord Baelish's death, which, there really wasn't any major characters' deaths in this season. If I'm forgetting someone, let me know. But apart from Peter Baelish, and here's the thing, Bronn is the luckiest son of a bitch in the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes. I love him so much.
That guy should have died like 6 times this season. Yes. You see, right? He shoots the freaking crossbow at the dragon, and the dragon's right there. Dracarys, here comes the fire. Oh, he's done. He's toast. He leaps 15 feet away, apparently, to avoid the dragon.
He's got very long legs.
He does. I mean, I thought, okay, then, I don't know. It's one of those things I thought, really? Really? But yeah, that guy, points for him.
Yeah, with the exception of Bronn, who does clearly have some kind of plot shield around him. Yes. And I don't even know why, because Bronn is such a random character.
That's sort of the point.
Oh, is that it? So they just decided to randomly give some guy a plot shield?
No,
he's clever, he's smart, but most importantly, he knows when to get out of the way.
Here's what I love about Bronn, and then I'll answer your other question. Right. Bronn is one of the few pragmatists.
Yes.
In the whole series, he is not moved by family, by duty, by tradition, by honor. His master is coin, gold. That is what he values, and he is always making a careful calculation about how much gold will be necessary for him to put his skin on the line.
Yeah.
And so it makes him sort of cheerfully, I don't know if we want to call it amoral, but certainly he is blessed with a lack any kind of moral compass.
No scruples.
And he has no scruples. And so it lets him sort of go where fortune lies. He's the perfect sellsword. And I think he's a fascinating character because he's befriended two of the Lannisters. In both cases, he ends up being a really good companion for both of them because he is completely outside of all of their family drama.
Yep.
He doesn't have a code to fall back on, you know? And so, and he sees it all for what it is. It's artifice, you know? It's a made up thing.
But unlike Baelish, he actually does have a kind of loyalty to friends. It's not a loyalty that normally will get him killed, but on the other hand, he'll jump in front of a dragon to drag Jamie off to one side, which is also protecting his purse, mind you, but he also admires Jamie.
He's not an altruist. Here's the thing.
I agree with all of that. All of that makes sense, and I absolutely agree that that is the characterization of Braun. But it doesn't. Joseph's question is, how does that make him an Olympic long jump guy, and an Olympic diver, and an Olympic swimmer, and the Flash, and you know what I mean?
He has luck points he can spend.
Well, oh my God, that's all he has at this point.
Not only did he leap away from Dragonfire, he ran, like Aaron said, like the Flash, to knock Jaime off of his horse into the ever amazingly deep shoreline of Westeros.
That actually turns out that was a river.
Even if it was a river, still. Right. I mean, even if it was a river, he's riding his horse like
an Olympic swimmer through the Marianas Trench,
and then picked up his armored body, and swam up with him.
Bothers me nearly as much as, oh, we're gonna have a cliffhanger ending of Jaime sinking, and then boom, he's pulled out of the river as if, you know, practically nothing happened.
He's okay.
Right.
He's okay.
And further, no, it's Braun. It's Braun that pulled him out of the river. You know. Anyway, but honestly, for me, that's a minor quibble. I think they're trying to just figure out how we're going to keep these characters alive, but also still convincingly, have the audience believe that they are actually in peril. And I think, and that's the beauty of the setup of Game of Thrones. That's the beauty of, at the beginning, you could not predict who was going to die. Is that when Jaime goes, when Jaime falls into the Marianas Trench, you're going, oh shit, he's going to drown. You know, you actually think he may actually drown, and then he doesn't.
Well, here's where the fans have got to start making some decisions. Actually, you don't have to start making them if you're a fan. It's just going to make your life easier if you're a fan. And fans, I'm speaking directly to you now. Everybody listen. You need to decide if you're going to be the kind of fan that is mad because certain storytelling conventions are now being observed in the series that weren't being observed before, or if you're just going to punch the button and wait for George R.R. Martin to finish his series. Because this is what happened.
Absolutely.
It's a long wait. And it's possible to go ahead and do both. But I need you to be quiet online now, okay? Especially if you're going to do both. If you're going to do both, please stop talking. Please stop talking about how time has suddenly sped up. Please stop talking about how we're suddenly not doing travel times, okay?
Yeah.
That is a storytelling convention that has been in use since the beginning of film.
Yeah.
And
that's the other thing that bothers me. People complaining about that, really? Yeah. So you're mad that between episodes, they clearly traveled the distance from wherever to where, like, that's, to me, that's the red dot sailing across the map in the Indiana Jones movies.
I don't need to see him
on the flight. I don't need to see what happens to him as he treks across Tibet.
To be fair, I understand where they're going, what the hell? Because in the first, I don't know, three seasons, they did spend an entire episode of John on a boat going, huh. Well, get there eventually. I mean, they did. Yeah. And they drug it out because that's how George Martin wrote the damn thing.
I think they
had to follow those conventions to fill in all that time. Now they're on their own. And we know how long it takes. I think that one of the biggest complaints was they're across the wall. Oh, my gosh. Gendry, run. Send a raven. Go. He runs like the Flash back to the wall. They grab a raven. Send a raven. Raven's off. Flying from the wall back to Dragonstone. Daenerys goes, hey, they need help. I'm getting them a dragon. Takes her dragon, flies back over there, and makes it in, what, 20 hours maybe?
I have an explanation for that.
Okay. All right.
Winter has been coming. Winter is here. What happens when things get cold? They contract. Distances get smaller.
The map is shrinking. God.
They're fucking folding space. Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about a show.
happen. Yeah.
We're talking about a show with dragons and the living dead. So, yeah, get over that. It's okay. Yeah. And people go, well, you know, it really, if that dragon flew that fast to get there, Daenerys would not be able to hold on. It'd be like hanging on to a jet airplane. There's no way she could do that. Shut up. Just shut up.
It does seem to be like a silly, I agree, Jance. That is such a silly thing to complain about. You know, again, look at the Lord of the Rings movies, right? We get that they're traveling a long distance. If you read the books, it takes them months. It takes them like 8 months to travel from where they were to Mordor. Yeah. The movie does not give you the impression that 8 months have passed. Yeah. And that's okay with me. We and get again, that eagles, they're traveling.
If they just use the eagles, we'd be...
Eagles are assholes. Birds are assholes. We've established this. We know.
I got to tell you, you know, I forget if it was season three or season four, where Arya basically spent the entire series in a circle. She literally traversed a circle. Yeah. And I that happens in the book as well. Right. But it happens in the book in a shorter amount of time and essentially gets her off of the continent by the end of the book. And so Arya, you know, is a perfect example of that. You know, they have left the source material behind, and in the interest of, you know, wanting to do other things to bring the series to a close, they have made the conscious decision that we're going to make the series shorter. We're going to cut out the travel times, because one of the other reasons for the travel times early on was to establish these characters. All right, these characters are now fully formed. Where anybody new that we meet, we'll get on the fly. Here's the deal. When they reintroduced Gendry, which was great, by the way, we learned everything we needed to know about Gendry in two scenes, you know? And then in the follow-up scene, when the Magnificent Seven took to the ice, we got everything we needed to know about Gendry.
Yeah, yeah.
So we really don't need, as much as we love Tyrion drinking and knowing things, as much as we love Jaime trying to decide if he's going to be a good person or not, those ships have sailed. And so I think now is the time for us to go ahead and get to the stuff that the series has been promising, and this is not a dig at Martin at all, because he gets to write the books that he wants to write when he writes them. But those books have not delivered yet. So,
yeah.
And by the way, and again, like Mark said, please, George R. R. Martin fans, do not throw hate at me. If you have to, send all hate mail to Mark Finn at Facebook. But if my experience of reading the books, and I say reading in quotes, I go to a chapter, and if I see the chapter as a character that I don't care about, which at this point is about 50% of the time, I skip over that chapter, and I go to the chapter with a character that I do care about. So my experience of the books are much more like the TV series. Yeah, because I skip over
a whole book that you ignored.
Pretty much. Yeah. Because I would go like, don't care. Oh, Arya. Okay, I'll read this chapter.
Oh, Brienne. Right.
And that's what I did. That is exactly what I did. And then, of course, people say, oh, no, you missed so much interesting stuff about Jane Poole and about these other characters. I'm like, no, I didn't. You're wrong. I missed nothing cool about those characters.
Yes,
because I don't care about those characters.
Gendry, this is Jon Snow. Jon Snow, this is Gendry. Hi, how are you? I thought you were taller. I thought you were thinner. Are we best friends now? Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
That's okay. That's okay. We'll take it. You know.
Yeah, we'll take it.
It's like playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Does he have a sword?
You know?
I've got a hammer.
Right, you know, yeah. I'll take you. It's like playing Dungeons and Dragons, and you're gathering the team. You know, who are you? I'm so and so. I can come with you. Yeah, sure, why not? Hey, these guys are in a cell. Who are you? I'm the Hound. Want to come with us? Sure, let's go. I mean, that's okay. I'm okay. And the Hound says it too. He says, "Can we please just get on with it?"
Yes. That's why I love the Hound so much. Yeah. I love the Hound because the Hound says what a lot of fans are thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And he's awesome. He's awesome. Enough talk. It's bullshit. Let's move on.
Yeah. Since you're talking about the Hound, let's take some polls here. Are we going to get Clegane Bowl? Are we going to get...
I hope so.
Because here's my prediction/dream, okay? All I'm going to go ahead and go on a little here. Here's what I want. No, this is what
awesome.
I want.
Awesome.
I want the Hound and the Mountain to face off, but the Mountain is no longer human. So he's got a distinct advantage. I mean, we saw a pike being driven through his chest and he just shrugged it off and ripped somebody's head off in return. So the Mountain is no longer the Mountain. He's something else. So if the Hound takes him on, he's got to have help. And who else better to help him? 2-on-1, which I think is a fair fight in this case.
Right.
But Brienne of Tarth. I think Brienne of Tarth and the Hound teaming up against the Mountain would make me very happy.
I love it. I love it. I pray to every deity I can think of that you are correct, because I'm exactly there. There must be a confrontation between the Hound and the Mountain. I will feel cheated if I am not given that confrontation. But like you, Joseph, I thought, God, so who could fight with him? Who could fight with him to kill the Mountain? And yeah, Brienne is a perfect choice. She's a perfect choice.
Absolutely a perfect choice. Yeah, that sort of thing.
He respects her. I mean, she bested him. He's like, I'm not fighting you anymore, but you know, you have my respect. Good for you. Let's do this. I mean, she's.
I do want to go back a little bit about the there's no surprises anymore.
Okay.
And mostly, I think that it's addressed in the form of unfinished business. Case in point, when Euron smashes the fleet, mm-hmm. and kidnaps his niece, Theon basically has a post-traumatic stress disorder freak out, you know, right. and bails, you know, mm-hmm. Didn't see that coming. You know, that was a great surprise. True. Because, and of course, Euron is a surprise anyways. All of this whole season, every time he does something, it's like, well, I did not see that coming, you know?
Yeah.
And so I love that the ongoing struggle with Theon to sort of make right his wrongs got addressed in the season. That was all good stuff. You know, that was all too. Really good stuff.
Handled
well. And, you know, it's important to remember that he was pretty capable before he got, you know,
broken.
Tortured. Yeah. Right. And broken it, literally in half. Mm-hmm. So that's
what leads me to believe, as far as predictions go, which leads me to believe, because I know the ending is going to be bittersweet. I'm prepared for that. But I do think Theon goes out taking out Euron. There's an instinct in me that says, yep, Theon goes down, but he goes down and he takes Euron with him.
Since you said his name twice, I'm going to say his name a third time, and I'm going to conjure him, because my breakout favorite character of this season has been Euron Greyjoy. I love that guy. I love everything he does. I love his swagger. I love his Forever 21 outfits that he wears with his spangly stars. I love the fact that he can come into a room and piss on Jaime and come on to the queen and leave the big meeting pretending that he's scared, stop to hit on Daenerys on the way out. I mean, he is awesome. He is the villain that we all love and we need. I needed a villain. I needed somebody to go, that guy's a son of a bitch, and that's my son of a bitch. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that guy. And I swear, every single time an episode ended, I said, I love him so much, I'm going to go out and make myself a driftwood crown so I could wear it every time I watch Game of Thrones. But I thought, don't bother Joseph, because he's going to die this next episode and you're going to have this fucking driftwood crown. And you'd be like, well, that was stupid. What a waste of time.
Well, that which is dead can never die. So
I should have made a driftwood crown, because you know what? He's still around, goddamn it.
Yeah. No, I do think they have plans for him. I think he is going to be an important part of how whatever ends up being the wrap up for Cersei's plot line. I think Euron is going to play very heavily into that. But no, you're right. That's the kind of characters that I think we've gotten used to on Game of Thrones. And again, God, no, I'm we're going to get so much hate mail from Martin fans, but what Martin has done with the books is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. I feel the same way about those as I do about Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. I mean, beautiful, wonderful. The world building is unparalleled. Characterization is unmatched.
It's not for you and me.
I am so happy that the TV series and the novels are two very different things.
Yeah.
I enjoy one for what it offers, and I enjoy the other for what it offers. But Euron in the books is nowhere near as interesting as Euron in the TV show. He just isn't. He just isn't. I've read the chapters with Euron in them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, he's kind of weird. He's kind of an odd fella. He's got some of the swagger. He keeps talking about this horn that he has and all this
theme.
Yeah, you know, but he's played with such panache by the guy with the fucking the handlebar mustache. It looks like he'd be right at home in a biker bar. And clearly that guy enjoys playing Euron. Yes. And yes. And the things
he's an escaped reaver from Guardians of the Galaxy.
He is. Right? Yeah. He is. And you know, the things he says to Jaime, and he's smiling the whole time, and Jaime's just like, oh, I'm going to kill you.
I know. And that swagger, that just joy, as he paraded through the streets of King's Landing and waving at the crowd and just loving it. Look at me.
No, he's a rock star. He's a rock star.
Yeah, he really is.
And so, but again, the treatment
Been a while since we've had a bad boy, you know?
Yeah.
Jaime was the bad boy in season one, and we really haven't, and Tyrion kind of was the bad boy, sort of. He was more of a clown at the back of the class cracking jokes. But we really haven't had a bad boy, you know? Not like this, and certainly not playing for the bad guys. So, yeah, it's nice.
It is very refreshing to see. But again, just that's the kind of stuff about the series, which is what frustrates me when people complain about whatever travel distances or oh, it's not close to the books or oh, it's you know doing whatever. No, this is quality entertainment, folks. These are amazing characters and amazing stories.
I remember people who have read the books freaking out that Sean Bean died at the beginning of season or at the end of season one. It's like,
oh, really?
You read the books, you knew that was coming. And now people are complaining that they're not like the books.
Well, you know what? Speaking of which, Sean Bean's death, we all know that unfortunately that was the ending of the first season and we had Sean Bean, of course he's going to die, but you know, we had Eddard, you know, losing his head. And boy, what a nice tie-in to the end of this season. Boy, it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
But when Bran, the three-eyed raven, and the three-eyed raven said to Baelish at the end of his life, you pulled a knife on my father and said, I told you not to trust me. Yeah. And you remember how hard that hit in season one when he did that to him?
Oh,
we were all like, oh, man. And we had to wait all this time to have that come up and have that word come back, that phrase come back up again, to be in his face going, you know what? I'm a three-eyed raven. I see everything. So guess what? I know exactly what happened.
And I think to me, that's why Baelish's death was more satisfying than Ramsay's, than any other death of a villain that we've seen. Because Baelish has been in there manipulating everything from the very beginning.
Yes.
And
he's been the agitator from season one on. Yeah.
In fact, if you even look at it, he set the whole thing into motion. He poisoned Jon Arryn, which started this entire story. Yep. So to see him on his knees begging for his life and Arya just without even blinking slashing his throat. Oh my God, that was deeply satisfying.
And there's a meme going around the internet about I demand you take me back to the Vale now. You cannot fast travel while enemies are nearby.
Yes. Sorry.
That was sweet. That was sweet. I love that. You can't fast travel.
But you know, looking at Baelish though, I mean, just real quick, because we're bringing him up, his character is, while he's one of these guys that you love to hate, and he's playing the game and blah blah blah. You can't, I feel sorry for him, but just based on his history, his past, where he came from, being denied. He was in love with Kat and said, you know, that didn't happen. He was always in around the houses and the royalty, but never one of them, never good enough to be truly one of them. Master of Coin, Hand, okay, fine. You're around us, but you're never going to get further than this. So when and help me out with Kat's sister, the one who was in
Lysa.
He says, fine, I'm gonna hook up with Lysa and charm the hell out of her, get her pregnant. And then Lysa's father said, no, you can't have this guy, this commoner's, this lower guy's baby, drink this, kill the baby, you out. I mean, that it's harsh. He's been pushed down and forced down and held down all of his young life. So you know, and even getting the name Littlefinger as a jeering taunt, and then everyone calls him that. That's what everyone knows him as. He's got a lot of hate built up there, you know? And this is a guy whose abilities could have been used for amazing good. He could have been an amazing asset, you know? And because people treated him the way they did, it created this villainous character, which, again, yeah, I'm glad to see him dead, but I always look back at this past and go, yeah, that guy had a
character
tough
development,
past.
Yeah.
Very
exactly.
much so.
I mean, that's exactly what makes a character compelling. I mean, if he was just a mustache-twirling villain, he'd be boring. He'd be dull.
Like Ramsay. Basically, the only reason Ramsay was interesting was the actor playing him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But well, no, I absolutely agree, Joseph. I think just the character of Baelish is just a masterstroke in creating a villain that is so complex. There's multiple sides to him. You can kind of understand where he's coming from, where his pain is coming from, why he wants so desperately to be able to control everything around him. He's an understandable, relatable villain.
And you're almost hoping that maybe he's actually going to turn out to be a good guy manipulating all this stuff in the background.
And that's the tragedy, right? That's the tragedy. I mean, the great conversation, people should go back and watch it, but the great conversation that Varys has with him, where they're trading barbs, and Varys is basically essentially telling him his philosophy that, yes, our methods are the same, but what I am doing, what Varys is doing, he's doing it for the greater good. Mm-hmm. And Littlefinger scoffs at that. Littlefinger's like, no, you think you are. You think you are. Mm-hmm. But no, simply you're just looking at it from another perspective. Your POV is different from mine. I think I'm doing it for the greater good. And us as the viewers go, nope, too bad. Littlefinger, man, he's a fucker and he needs to go down.
Well, this has always been his downfall. The two things that he has been unable to let go of are the Stark women and his need for power. Yeah. He could have been written out in season 6 if he'd stayed at the Vale.
Yeah.
If he, because he was Lord of the Vale. He could have had enough. That. It wasn't enough. Yeah. He had to make himself desirable to Sansa, you know? And I love the best thing about the denouement is that, you know, I was really worried that Sansa and Arya would take up the old fight, and it looked like they were going to. But the thing that they actually rallied around to each other was Dad.
Yeah.
You know, and the family, and you know, no matter what our roles were, and what they are and what they may be, we have unfinished family business to attend to, and that's the unjust murder of our father. And so
interestingly, I don't know if they filmed it, but interestingly, what turned her around, what made her realize this was the case, is she went to talk to Bran, and Bran laid it all out for her. Bran told her everything that happened.
Yeah.
And so Sansa was like, oh my gosh, why didn't I see this? Because Bran had information that Sansa knew was accurate, he knew things he should not have known, and he did. Right. So he brought them around to where it's like, nope, this is what Littlefinger is doing. And that's why that scene, when you watch that scene, and the actress who plays Sansa does a great job of it, the venom, right? You know, when she's like, do you deny it? I mean, she's so infuriated that he has manipulated her all along. She even cops to it and says, I'm a slow learner. That's true. That is true. You know? And, and it's just wonderful. It's just, it all came together so well that you know, you have to just tip your hat to that kind of storytelling, that kind of narrative. Man, good stuff. It's good stuff.
The series of he had to go through everything in his arsenal. Okay, can I just get you alone for a minute? I know that I can explain this if it's just you and I. No, okay. Yeah. Can you take me back to the Vale? No, I can't fast travel. Okay, and then finally drops on his knees and just begs. He had nothing, you know. He eliminated every possible weapon in his arsenal, caught off guard, which isn't a good place to be. In like, you know, lounging up against the wall, watching the proceedings with a grin on his face. And then he hears his name and he's like, wait, what did she say?
Exactly. You know? What a great, again, a wonderful performance by that actor. You know, Lady Sansa, I'm a bit confused. Yeah, she's like, yeah, what part? What part are you confused by, motherfucker? Yeah, you're going
which,
down.
Which one of the charges bothered you? I'll explain them. Yeah. We have to talk about the elephant, or should I say the dragons? Double-backed dragon in the room. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was worried about this. And in fact, after we watched the episode, my wife and I had to go get out the family tree to find out just at what level of incest was happening in the Targaryen family, and if this was going to produce a baby with 9 heads. And we have concluded that, much like in Alabama and parts of Mississippi, second cousins don't count.
Nope, they don't. And yeah. It's important that, because she, the last time she tried to get pregnant with Drogo's baby, they had this horrible thing, this scaled monstrous thing that died. She could not have babies because it has to be a Targaryen. That's my theory. I think the only way they're going to get an heir is if a Targaryen. Because I can't have kids. And Jon Snow's like, well, I'll take that challenge. Oh, really? Well, we'll see what about. And sure enough, I think that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to get an heir, and I think it's going to be because it's a Targaryen with a Targaryen. And that family's been doing that for generations. Yeah. And there's also
some magic
involved. I mean, we're talking about fireproof dragon people. So, you know what? I'm okay with it.
I actually, that's exactly where they're going. I mean, you know, whether people are ooked by the idea of the incest or not, I mean, I understand it. But I think that's definitely where they're going with it, is if you want a viable, healthy Targaryen heir, then the mom and dad need to be Targaryen. And, you know, because, I mean, every time they mention somebody who was not a Targaryen that would have a baby that was partially Targaryen, something would go wrong, whether that was Tyrion or killing of the mother who bore Jon. It's almost like it's too much for them. It's too much for their bodies. Same thing with the Mad King's wife. She died. It's like she couldn't continue to have children that were resistant, immune to fire, and have other abilities that we may not know of. It's too much. It's too much for them. So it is interesting to see where they're going to go with the whole Jon and Daenerys. There's a part of me that thinks that neither Jon nor Daenerys will sit on the Iron Throne. Again, going back to that bittersweet ending, there's some small part of me that says Daenerys goes down helping to take out the Night King. And I think Jon, somehow, people have postulated that it might be Bran that does this, but I don't think so. I think Jon somehow has to become the Night King. I think Jon is the new individual, the hero that leads the White Walkers and all of that back across to the north and ends the war. It is called the Song of Ice and Fire. Jon represents both ice and fire. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I think it has something to do with Jon. Again, everyone's saying it's going to be Bran. Oh, Bran. He's going to become the new Night King. But I don't think so. I don't believe that it's going to
where
be
did,
Bran.
Now, the whole idea about getting a new Night King, where did you... Hello? Okay, I just heard some strange noise. And I'm scared. The new Night King, the whole idea about there being a new Night King, where did that come from? Is this mythology, or are you just, fan supposition? Where did this come from?
Both. I mean, there's a lot of speculation online, and a lot of it comes from, you know, a lot of the stuff that's in the books, you know, prophecies that have been talked about, what little there is to know about the Night King, who the Night King is, or who he's thought to be. They believe it is a Stark. They believe the Night King, the original Night King, is a Stark. And what exactly the White Walkers are, what the relationship between the White Walkers and the Children of the Forest are, because early on, I remember Martin saying something about that the White Walkers and the Children were like, they're basically the same kind of creature. Let's say we want to call them elves.
Right.
Children of the Forest are the summer elves, and the others, because they are called the others in the books, they're not called White Walkers, they're called the others. Mm-hmm. The others are almost like frost elves, but they're the same kind of entity. They weren't created by the Children of the Forest. Now, again, they may change that for the TV show.
In the
series,
didn't
they show us? Didn't they show us the children of the forest making the Night King by shoving the piece into his heart while he was still alive? Screaming and changing. Yeah, they created it.
They did. However, the stories of the Long Night predate that. The stories of the Long Night go back before the children of the forest were fighting men and made the White Walkers so they could help them defeat men.
Okay.
There was the last great winter that there are many, many legends about. Where the others would walk around, and they had spiders. They had spiders the size of horses that would accompany them. I think they existed. I think they existed in the books. They existed before the Night King. The Night King somehow now has become their leader. And again, this could be totally different for the TV show, and they could have just thrown out everything Martin did and say, screw it. The Night King was the first White Walker, and he created all the other White Walkers, in which case then, you know, all this doesn't matter. But that's what I've seen speculated, is that you don't just by killing the Night King, the threat doesn't end. You know, winter will continue to come. It's just cyclical for this planet. There are creatures that exist in that part of the world, that untamed, unknown part of the world that's just ice and frost. They don't know what's there.
Let me really, really quickly, I want to repeat, no with the spiders. If there are spiders the size of horses, like Brawn, I would be like, no, our partnership ends here.
I don't think they're going to do them in the show. They talk about them in the books. Old Nan used to mention them in her stories when she was telling them to Bran and everybody, all the kids. But, you know, so there's a lot of mythology that I just don't know how they're going to bring into the series, if they do,
left.
Exactly. Well, and then six episodes, then aren't they going to do, like, isn't there like a big movie to wrap it up? Maybe I'm thinking something else, but okay.
Six seasons in a movie.
Okay. I thought it was a movie.
They're doing spinoff series that are probably going to be prequels, but nobody knows what they are yet.
Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so who knows? I just don't think that either Jon nor Daenerys will end up on the Iron Throne. I'm not sure who will, but I don't think it's going to be
Tyrion.
It's Pod. Tyrion, you joke, but I think Tyrion has a very good chance of becoming the next king, because he has the temperance that he needs. He has the wisdom from Dany. He has all the stuff that he's seen. He has his own heart to guide him. I think he would be a fantastic king. And that's exactly who should be king.
Lord in Westeros would follow him. Not a single person in the city would be like, oh, the dwarf is our king? Cool.
I actually don't know that I agree with that. It depends on what happens in the events. Because I think Cersei's meat. And I think Jaime's meat. The Lannisters are gone. The Tyrells are gone. The Martells are gone. I mean, who's left?
Right. Tyrion does have a win in his column in that he successfully helped defend the city.
That's true. They could boast that.
And if anybody is going to break the wheel, which is really what Dany wants, if anyone is going to break the wheel, it's going to be Tyrion.
Yeah.
I could be totally off. Gobbled up by a demon or something.
Holding out that Jaime may survive this, simply because he may be the prince that was promised, and he does not want to be king.
No, he does not.
He serves whoever's in charge. That's him.
I still think Jaime will kill Cersei. Some people are saying, no, it's going to be Arya killing Cersei. I'd be happy with either one. But there's some sadness in me that says that Jaime does not make it out of this. In fact, I think he and Brienne will die in fairly close proximity to each other.
Jaime has revealed that he is powerless to resist his sister. He can't.
He walked away from her.
He rode off to satisfy his knight's code. You know, he's basically trying to restore his honor by keeping his word. Right. That was a big issue with him, with Brienne and the whole Oathbreaker stuff.
Right.
So this is Jaime trying to do that. But we have seen, you know, that all through season 7 and the end of season 6, when Cersei snaps her fingers or, you know, kisses him, he's powerless to resist her. And so I feel that I think if they try to contrive a way for Jamie to kill his own sister, it's going to fail. I don't think it's going to work. It just, he loves her too much.
Unless he finally sees what she has become. If she come on, this is the guy that broke his oath and killed the Mad King, not because he just didn't like the Mad King, but because the Mad King was about to kill thousands and thousands of innocents.
Right. Yeah, this is why Jamie with the did Mad what King. He did.
Right.
He wasn't sleeping with the Mad
but
King.
But still, I think once that Jamie realizes
that we know him. Yeah. But he does love his, I mean, he loves Cersei. I mean,
he does.
Yeah.
But I think if she has gone off the deep end and is certifiably mad.
No, you're right. Yeah. If he goes that route and he ends up killing her, he's quickly going to either throw himself into a fire or kill himself in battle, or he's gonna say, I got nothing.
Here's a prediction.
Don't forget, he's killing for two.
Yeah, he's killing for two. And that's why I think he dies. That's why I think he will go down in a battle. Well, and I think it'll be shortly after he has killed his sister. He has nothing more to live for.
Do you think Cersei's really pregnant?
That's a damn good question. Blythe and I have talked about that a lot.
She can't have the kid.
Why can't she?
It goes against the prophecy.
What's the prophecy? That she won't have any more children?
Yeah, the number of children that she has and they all die from the witch.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know. I think she might be. It would be just like Cersei to play them all to control Jaime.
Yeah.
But on another hand, we could get a 2-for-1 if Jaime doesn't kill her but allows her to be killed.
I think Arya's going to do it.
Yeah. And Arya would be great.
Now, hell, it might be Arya wearing Jaime's face. I don't know. You know,
she could walk in wearing Littlefinger's face for him.
That's true. But here's a weird prediction, and we'll see if I'm right. But here's a weird prediction. You know who I actually think might be end up sitting on the Iron Throne as king and queen? Gendry marrying Sansa, and I think they will be king and queen of the.
That would be awesome.
Yep. That is what I see. I see the legitimate heir because they're not going to pay attention to the Targaryens anymore. They don't care about that. They're only listening to the Targaryens because she has fucking dragons. But once all that is settled, once the dust is settled, dragons are gone, all the Targaryens are dead, I think that the legitimate heir, Gendry, even if he's a bastard, you know, Gendry. And then again, you seal that breach. You marry the Baratheon with a Stark, which is what the old Baratheon king wanted to begin with. He wanted a marriage between the Baratheons and the Starks. And then they end up. That is my totally wild theory that I'm throwing out there. And of course, Tyrion is the Hand. That is how I see this series ending. Gendry is king.
I love that so much. I'm going to embrace it, and I'm going to throw my lot in with yours. Okay. I pledge to you my steel in the hopes that happens.
I'm going to go out on a limb and state that the peasants are going to rise up and there'll be a democracy at the end and the Iron Throne is seen melting. That's the
end.
Ooh,
wow.
That's a brave prediction, my friend.
I'm going to go even braver and bolder, and I'm going to predict that Euron ends up sitting on the Iron Throne. Yes, I think Euron Greyjoy is going to get his wish. He's going to marry Cersei, and then Cersei's going to die, and Euron's going to hide his ass, and then when it's all said and done, he's going to come strolling out wearing his Forever 21 jacket, and he's going to sit on that throne and pull one leg over the arm and say, "Here I am, boys! King!
Bring me a wench!"
Yeah, that's the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. That would be truly amazing if any of those came true.
No.
Here's the deal, guys. They've got 6 episodes to wrap it up in because season 8 is 6 episodes.
Longer episodes. Like each one will be like an hour and a half. Each one will be its own mini movie. From what
they're certainly all going to be larger, and obviously they're doing battles and dragons and stuff. So it's going to be a short season, but it's going to be an epic final season.
It's technically going to be 9 episodes worth of material.
Right.
Because probably
adding
time
to each episode.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, the real question, the one thing we haven't talked about, I want to hear predictions. Who kills the undead dragon. Does Viserion get killed by Drogon, and do they kill each other, or does Drogon kill him and then Drogon's killed? How does the undead dragon die?
He has a hot tamale and.
Okay, let's get some serious answers, Mark. How do you think the undead dragon dies?
Well, I think. Go ahead.
No. I want to hear yours.
I think that you have basically placed Chekhov's dragon on the mantle. Okay. And so there's no way that you cannot get out of season 8 without having an aerial dogfight with dragons over the larger battlefield.
And the only way you can have dragon on dragon action is if it's the Frost Dragon.
I suspect that John will be able to ride the other dragon, and I think that Danny and John will team up to fight the King of the North.
Oh, that would be sweet!
Or Tyrion.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it is John and Danny each riding one of the living dragons, just going all out against the Night King on his undead dragon. That would be an epic showdown.
I suspect one of them's going to get
Bronn.
I think
Bronn, with his amazing power to escape death, is going to once again get behind one of those crossbows, but this time it's going to be a weapon made of dragon glass, and he's going to fire that thing, and he's going to hit the undead dragon and bring it down.
Or better yet, I think Bronn will hold a dragon glass dagger in his hand, and he will fire himself. He will fire himself like a ballista.
Like Ariana from the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
That's right.
He's going to launch himself into the air with his thing.
Geronimo!
And he's going to survive it. He's going to come down and survive it.
Well, he'll surf one of the pieces down.
I'm halfway serious about that. I think that dragon glass weapon on that crossbow is probably a good idea when you're dealing with an undead dragon, right?
Or even the Night King.
It would be funny to see Bronn fire the shot that kills it. We were laughing, but then everybody kind of went, that could actually,
You know, Bronn had a moment there with Podrick when they were before the big meeting, when the entire cast of Game of Thrones gathered for a meeting, when Bronn said, "Hey, come on, let's go have a drink." And he left.
I love that. Yeah.
And, do you know why that's in the script?
Let me tell you what I think, and then you'll tell me why it's in the script. But when they did that, everyone at my viewing party looked at each other like, "Uh-oh, like they're getting out of there. Does he know something that we don't? Does Bronn know something that he's trying to save Podrick? Like Podrick? Oh shit! But then I realized after it was all said and done and over, and I could breathe again, I thought, I don't think Bronn wants to be around the dragon. I think he's terrified of the dragons because he saw what they can do. So he's like, "Hey, she's coming. She's going to be here with the damn dragons. Hey, Pot, let's go get a drink. Let's get out of here. Let's go.
That's funny.
That's where my brain went. I thought, I just don't think he wants to be around the dragons. Yeah. So Mickey, what are you going to say?
In real life.
Mickey will tell you he is afraid of a dragon, but it's not an imaginary one. Go ahead.
In real life, his actor and Cersei's actor used to date. They have restraining orders out on each other, and they cannot be on the same set at the same time.
Cersei has, the actress who plays Cersei has requested as part of the contract that she never appear in the same scene as the actor who plays Bronn. They used to date, and it did not end well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pre-series.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
Wow. That's
brilliant. This wasn't a series romance gone wrong. This was before the series.
Wow. Anyway, it's just fun.
Imagine that, man. It's just like, I mean, just imagine you get hired for a role. You pay Queen Cersei? Sure. Who else is in this series? And Bronn doesn't even show up until season 2, right?
I believe so.
I mean, I don't think he showed up in season 1. So she's cast. She's, okay. And then, hey, here's the new season. Here are the characters. Here are some of the actors. And does she walk into the read and go and just turn around and walk back out of the room? And then have to, "Hey, where are you going?" Just walks out and says, nope.
Not happening.
You want me to be in the show? I do not do things with that guy, you know?
Wow.
I think he was in season 1 as a friend of Tyrion's.
Yeah, no, that's a...
I think he's from the get-go when we meet Tyrion.
It's just funny. It's just funny. When I read that, I was like, oh my God, that's almost too good to be true. You know, there's gotta be an urban myth, but no, apparently that is true. Yeah.
And it makes me go, because I love both of them and I'm like, I can't be team either one of them.
Yeah.
No, that actor, he's in, he was until recently in Ripper Street. Plays a fantastic character in Ripper Street. So no, I'm a big fan, and that's the thing. I know we're getting close to wrapping up here, but I must give full kudos and applause and praise to the casting of this series.
Yes,
which has been, I think, just phenomenal top to bottom. There's not a single character I can think of that I thought was miscast or cast badly.
They found somebody who looked like Brienne.
I know. And again,
they found somebody who looked like Tyrion. I mean,
going back to the novels, I liked Brienne in the novels. I love Brienne in the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
So no, beautiful, beautiful job on casting and solid actors. And
even
so,
Varys.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've ever seen the actor in anything else, he's nothing like that character.
Yeah. He has hair.
Yes.
Yeah. It just speaks again, gents, to the quality, to the love that the showrunners have for the material. You know, we would all be so lucky as to have one of our works adapted with such grace and care and skill as we have seen with Game of Thrones. If I were Martin, I would be delighted that this series exists.
He turned down so many until he met these guys.
Yeah.
Here's a final question, and then we can go around the table because we are getting the red eye from Max. But I'm going to pose this final question, and you guys tell me why or why not, and we'll wrap this up. You mentioned something, Aaron, that's interesting to me. Martin has not obviously finished the books.
Right.
The Game of Thrones TV show is going to finish. HBO is going to wrap it up. We're all going to know how this is going to end.
Yep.
Does Martin finish the books? And if so, do you think it's going to hurt the sales of his books? It might be different enough for hardcore fans to go, well, let's see what he was going to do. But we all know that that's going to be the ending. We all know what's going to happen and how it's going to end. So what kind of a position does that put a writer to go, well, I've told everyone what I'm going to do. They basically spoiled my ending for the world, and now I got to finish these books.
I actually think in the case of Martin, he can use this to his advantage. Okay. Because he can say, well, that's how the creators of the show, kudos to them, chose to end this series. I have made different choices, and you can read my novels to see what my choices were. Right. And I think fans of the show, in fact, I think it'll help him. Fans of the show who might not have been inclined to pick up the books might now be inclined to pick up the books. I think it's a win-win for Martin.
I absolutely agree. I think it's going to be, I think people are going to treat the novels now like the director's cut.
Yeah,
and they're going to read the novel to get more of the story behind this guy and that guy and the other guy and her and him. And because he's got some characters that have not made it into the series or who have been combined into the thing. And so
where the hell is Stoneheart?
For example. And so those things are going to come out and be resolved. And even though we're probably going to see the same beats, I think he's going to play those drums very differently.
And so,
it's totally going to be a win-win for everybody. And especially if you're a fan of the series.
And you have
to remember that
Martin has a tremendous background in television. He has experience with how that works and how his books work and everything like that. He did Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. He's written lots of scripts and everything like that. So it's not like we have a disconnect between the author and the TV show based on, you know, just ignoring each other or anything like that. It'll still be, you know, the cinematic thing that we're expecting with TV, even if it's not the same thing.
Right. But it is this. I mean, in terms of the ending, I mean, we know that that's going to be the ending. He said he shared with HBO how it's going to end. So we know that's how it's going to end. So, you know what I'm saying? So don't you think that there's some level of, well, why bother? I know how it ends.
No, well, I think there'll be more interest. I mean, certainly that will be
the
case.
Does that hurt Titanic?
You know.
Well, no, I think people who aren't readers are going to be all right with it. I don't think it's going to convert a non-reader into a reader for the purposes of this show.
I would agree with that. I don't think it's going to make new readers, but I think it'll take people who already were inclined to read the books, but maybe were holding off. It will interest them. They want to see what.
And that's probably true. Yeah. I have a few friends in my social circles that, you know, are frustrated with the fact that he never finished the books
It's been six years. And that's has anyone else heard this? He is now working with two other writers to finish the next book. It's not just him. He is actually co-writing the books with two other writers. I read that online.
Is Sanderson one of them?
No, I don't know, but I've not been able to verify that. I just read that in a tweet or something, and I'm like, oh, really? No shit. He's hired two other writers to help finish the books because it's been 6 years and he's not doing it.
Right. And again, I hope everything's fine. My brain just went to a place where I thought maybe this is not going to be the best thing for him. But who knows? Who knows? I hope it is. I've read the first book and I wasn't inclined to pick up any of the others, and I'm happy with the HBO show. So there you are. Hey, you know what? The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and written by Aaron DiArrive, Mark Finn, Mickey Finn, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by The Iron Bank. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, the Gentleman Nerd's mascot, the mascot with no name, he'll never have a name, he has no face, mascot has no name, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender and caterer was Hot Pie. Our sound editor and accidental producer is Mickey Finn. Our executive producer and the man we all pray that never gets superpowers is Aaron DiArrive. Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher DiArrive. No dire wolves were hurt or injured in the recording of this podcast. Join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we meet, and please always tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Gentleman Nerds is lovingly dedicated to the memory of Toby Hooper. Because of you, Toby, a chainsaw will never again be just for cutting wood. The saw is family. I'm Joseph Fortinos, reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
Boom. Yep. Boom.
Nice.
All right. I'm going to step out to get some water. I will be back.
A quick drinky drink.
Everybody's dancing in the moonlight.
Dancing in the moonlight.
Hey, look, either join me on the harmony or get out of the way.
Okay, gent. Sorry about that.
Yes.
I thought it was
going to be awesome. It's going to be swell.
Aaron.
He's still in the bathroom.
Okay.
He's making water.
What is wrong with you?
We are a very musical people, okay?
I don't know who to blackmail with this.
I think that King Harvest, if he's dead, is rolling in his grave. All right. I don't know if he's dead or not, but that might have killed him.